The Reverend Nicole Garcia is FaithWorks Director at the National LGBTQ Task Force. She's in Washington along with many other faith leaders to urge the Senate to pass the Respect for Marriage Act. Interfaith Alliance and its partners have been working nonstop for this important legislation, and I am so happy to welcome Reverend Garcia today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It is an absolute pleasure to be here.
Well, you know what? It's kind of amazing that we have to be here, isn't it? We're in a moment in our country where some of the rights that we are beginning to be comfortable with and enjoy as people are all of a sudden at risk because of an activist Supreme Court, which we've already seen. And so we need to actually take this moment with this Senate and say, no, we're not going back. So talk to me a little bit about how you see specifically this bill working in American legal reality, as well as just in an American's mindset and spirit.
Well, what this bill really does is not increase or change what is happening right at this moment, but rather taking action by Congress to ensure that individuals who can legally marry will have those marriages recognized throughout the country. You know, before 2015, that wasn't the case. For example, I had dear friends who were married in San Francisco in 2008. There was a short period of time when California was issuing marriage license to same-sex couples, and they got married, and then they left California and went home, and they weren't sure if their marriage was legal in the state where they resided. Now, what the 2015 decision did in Obergefell was to ensure that all legal marriages are legal throughout the country. It's not telling anybody you have to perform marriages. It's not telling anybody you have to do anything. It's just basically ensuring the rights that we have at this very moment are maintained.
Absolutely. And as I learned more about this bill, I didn't realize that DOMA was still on the books. And,
yes.
You know, I mean, this is actually rectifying a wrong, in fact. Also, like, we're not getting out in front of anyone. This is actually really now, it is consensus opinion. And as you know better than anyone, this is consensus opinion with almost every religious group in America. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, we are not getting out in front of our skis or asking senators to do anything radical. We're just asking for things to be acknowledged in the reality that they are.
Correct. This has wide bipartisan support. It passed the House a while ago, and it's been waiting in the Senate. And with all the Senate rules, we had to make sure that we had 60 senators who would vote to bring this bill to the floor. And it looks like that will happen very, very soon.
I'll just interject. Hopefully, by the time you're hearing this broadcast, we have won this. But really, it's religious groups are pretty much unanimous. There are a few outliers, but religious groups are pretty unanimous on this.
Yes, we have to recognize that individuals have the right and freedom to love who they love. We can't dictate who the heart desires. And you happen to love someone of the same sex, your love should be recognized throughout the country. I have dear friends who are gay and lesbian, who are raising kids, who have been together for 20, 30, 40 years, who have built lives together. And the great fear is, what if Obergefell were overturned and someone is driving across country and they get into a car accident and the person that you've been married to for 25 years, you're not able to make medical decisions because the state you happen to be in doesn't recognize your marriage? That would be devastating.
It's just devastating. You know, this, devastating. And you know, as many people know listening to this broadcast, that describes my family. I mean, my husband and I have been together for 20 years. We have two kids. And the idea that all of a sudden our marriage could be dissolved or not recognized is just, you know, I just ask anyone who's on the fence about this, imagine that situation for your family and how terrible that would be. It seems even more like wild to have to mention that this also talks about interracial marriage. Because and for those who, you know, for those who are, I think, are younger, you may not be aware of the incredible controversy that interracial marriage caused in this country. It was illegal in many places. Unfortunately, it was many of the objections were coming from Christians who were quoting the Bible. You know, it's all very recognizable. And so just talk a little bit about, why that's included in this bill and the importance of that as well, because there are interracial couples for whom this is not like distant memory. In the 1960s, 95% of Americans disapproved of interracial marriage. You know, I mean, like, you know, this is like recent history. I'm not talking about 1800s here. I'm talking about 20th century, late 20th century. So talk to me a little bit about how the advantage of this being inclusive, an inclusive bill.
Well, this is all coming about because of a statement made by one of the conservative justices on the court and their, I believe, concurring opinion from the Dobbs case. And that all the opinions that have been made and the Loving case, Obergefell, they were all mentioned. And so we just cannot rely on the courts anymore to grant us the rights that we have worked so hard to obtain. We can't let those rights slip through our fingers. So this bill simply codifies the fact that marriage should be recognized, marriage between two people, no matter of their gender or their race or their ethnicity, they're valid throughout the United States. And Congress cannot dictate to states who they can marry and can't marry. So we're not telling anybody who you have to marry. It's just the fact that if someone has a valid marriage license from one of the 50 states or the territories, my understanding is, then that marriage is valid.
Right. Talk to me a little bit. Your portfolio is at the task force is faith. Tell me about how you feel faith, religion, spirituality fits into the wider goals, ambitions of the task force, and specifically when we're talking about this bill, like why is faith such an important part of the conversation when we're talking about a marriage equality?
I have to go back and really first recognize and apologize for the fact that there are parts of the, I'll call it conservative church, that actively tell people who are LGBTQ that they are not worthy of God's love, that they are not welcome in God's kingdom, that they are inherently sinful. And I am a transgender Latina. I was raised in a conservative Christian family. But when I, in my 40s, came to the terms of the fact that I am transgender, I have always been a woman, and I'm a person of deep, deep personal faith, a faith that my mother instilled in my heart, a faith that keeps me afloat in this very, very difficult world. So personally, I'm devoted heart, mind, and soul to our Lord Jesus Christ. I am also Latina, born on December 12th, the Feast Day of La Virgen de Guadalupe. So I'm devoted to La Virgen de Guadalupe and the Mother of God. So for me, it became a matter of bringing together my trans identity and my faith. And I want to give other people that opportunity. There are so many times I walked into LGBTQ spaces wearing a clerical collar, and people will come up to me and say, I used to be Methodist, I used to be Lutheran, I used to be Catholic, but they invited me to leave, or were even more harsh. They told me to leave because I was no longer welcome. Well, there are places where you can be gay and Christian, lesbian and Christian, or you can be gay and Muslim, and you can be gay and Buddhist. I truly believe in an infinite God with infinite love. And to me, God speaks through Jesus and La Virgen. But to other people, God may speak to them in other ways. And who am I to limit the love of God, that someone cannot commune with God through Buddha or Muhammad But as a practicing and a Lutheran pastor, this is where I start. This is my foundation.
Yeah.
And I'm just so happy to say that my church, the ELCA, recognizes my ministry with the task force as a call to ministry.
It's so wonderful. And I just think we have to just be really clear. What you're doing is saving lives.
Yes.
And you're also just making a clear claim. This is not religion versus LGBTQ people. This is recognizing that actually they're most Americans are religious, many LGBTQ people are religious of some faith
yes.
background or spiritual. And we are not going to put one group against another. It's just we're not playing that game. And we're insisting to everyone that, like, we can come together, we can be together. And the fact that you exist, that I exist, does not mean that you can't exist. It just means that there's just going to be a little bit more room at the table. And that's fine. That's beautiful. And so I appreciate you what you're doing and how important faith is in the lives of people and in the fight for marriage equality, because at the base level, at the fundamental level, it's about love. It's about who
Precisely.
Do you want to spend time with. It's about who do you want to commit your life with, for better or for worse, as anybody who's had a relationship. But who do you want to commit with? And so I appreciate that so much. I want to just take a little bit of time to recognize while this bill is extremely important and really, you know, will be life-saving, there is so much work that we have to do and everyone has to do around trans rights in this country and trans rights to respect, dignity, and the right to exist and live without the threat of violence. And I just would love for you to talk a little bit more about that, and specifically in the context of the Trans Day of Remembrance that is coming up on November 20th.
Yes, this, I believe it's Sunday, is Trans Day of Remembrance. And throughout the country, so many organizations, I'm part of an organization in my hometown of Boulder, Colorado. Well, we will recognize, hold a candlelight vigil, to recognize over 300, I believe it's about 360 individuals who are transgender, non-binary, gender non-conforming, who were murdered in this past year, almost 40 in the United States alone. I did a faith-based remembrance service last Saturday in Boulder, and there were 37 people who were unknown, that their bodies were so badly beaten and burned that they could not be identified. That is horrific. And we're probably only talking about the tip of the iceberg, because most law enforcement agencies don't collect gender identity. So we will know if someone is trans or non-binary if their family or friends come forward and let us know. So the numbers may be so much higher. And it is such an incredible crime. It breaks my heart that people who are just trying to live their authentic lives as God created them to be are brutally murdered for just being themselves.
I mean, it is, well, I'm a Baptist preacher, so I can say it's sinful. What is happening? The hate that people have in their heart, the violence that people are using with their hands, that is sin. Hating something that is different from you just because you haven't taken the time to get to know an individual and all that they represent. These, you know, and so when we take time on Sunday for Trans Remembrance Day, a day of remembrance, is to recognize these were children of people. These were parts of families. These were people who were loved in loving relationships. These were lives with hearts beating, and they're no longer here. And that is a tragedy, and we need to recognize it, and we need to work to stop it. And frankly, unfortunately, this has become an issue among some of our some Americans who've decided to target trans people for base mm-hmm. reasons of trying to instill fear and to get votes. And yes. I just think that's one of the most disgusting trends. I hate to call it a trend, but I see a trend line there where people are like, oh, maybe like demeaning people can be a winning issue for us.
Oh, it is disgusting. And, you know, we've heard of the don't say gay laws, the attempts to make sure that transgender youth are not able to participate in sports, passing these laws that are just so hateful against people who cannot defend themselves. And the fear is instilled in parents. And trans youth are just, they're, I should say, easy targets because we all love children. We want to protect our children. And so when they bring up that fear about, well, they, quote unquote, us trans people are trying to recruit your children and trying to turn them away from you or turn them away from God, that we are going to use them and abuse them. It's not true. It's just not true. No,
I think to a lesser degree, the idea that anybody can be turned gay, you know, is also like equally untrue. But, you know, I also really feel, you know, for the trans youth themselves and for their parents who almost always are trying to, because they love their child, they're trying to do what they think is right to care for their child and what the medical profession actually largely agrees is the right care for a child. And then, and then there's other people who have no vested interest in that child. Who come in and say, oh, well, you're doing it wrong. And what happened to parents' rights? It's all very good and well and good when it's in support. But, you know, the interrupting a family's attempt to care for their child. I mean, you tell me, you know much better than I do. But that feels just absolutely like the worst abuse.
It really is the worst abuse. And, you know, I'm also a licensed therapist in the state of Colorado, and I've worked with hundreds of trans people through the years. And I follow the advice and guidance of the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, WPATH, and their standards of care. And they just came out with a new updated version, Standards 8. And you can't take a child in. It's against medical advice to take a child in and say, well, go ahead and start them on hormones. Or go ahead and, no, it doesn't work like that. It's a long process that involves therapists and it involves doctors and involves endocrinologists, a lot of specialists who love and care for this child. Nothing is going to be done with or for a child unless it is really deemed necessary.
Yeah. Where can religious people learn more? Anybody, but really, like people who are coming from a faith angle, how can those of us who want to learn more? Do you have resources at the task force that people can go to learn more?
As a matter of fact, I have a website called the Institute for Welcoming Resources. Now, when the task force brought on a faith component, we brought along with us a lot of the major Protestant denominations all have welcoming programs. The Lutherans, I'm a Lutheran, have Reconciling Works, More Like Presbyterians, Welcoming Ministries Network, which are Methodists. We all came together and we all provide resources for families, for people of faith. And you can go to the Institute of Welcoming Resources to the website that I oversee. And there are just a plethora of resources
that are coming out. Can you give us the website address?
It's just called www.welcomingresources.org.
I love it. That's easy to remember. Welcomingresources.org. That's a first step you can take that we can all take in order to learn more. And it's fine. We all have to learn. Like, we all have to learn about racism. We all have to learn about classism. We all have to learn about, like, people from different backgrounds and immigration status. No one has to be perfect, but I think, we all learn. And that's the great thing is that this is a resource for all of us to learn and for us to all grow. And once we stop growing, we're not alive anymore. So let's keep growing. Let's keep learning. Thank you for all you do at the task force and in your just as a living witness to the power and the grace of our world. We're so grateful to be in partnership with you in this work, and look forward to being to more fun projects that we can work on together. Fun, we can. I just want to. We can be joyful, you know.
Yes.
We can be joyful while we do this work, and we're going to be. We're going to insist on it. So, Reverend Nicole Garcia is FaithWorks Director at the LGBT Task Force. In partnership with Interfaith Alliance and a coalition of committed ally groups, we brought a diverse group of faith leaders from across the country to urge senators to vote for the Respect for Marriage Act. Nicole, thank you so much for being with us here on State of Belief Radio.
Oh, it is my absolute pleasure. And I just want to make sure that the people out there know that you have the right to call your senators, make your voice heard as well. Let them know that you support the Respect for Marriage Act and support all the work that the Interfaith Alliance is doing, that we are doing at the task force. And I look forward to many years of working with you and Interfaith Alliance.
Before we go, we recorded this conversation in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday morning, one day before Interfaith Alliance brought scores of faith leaders to visit U.S. Senator's office to urge passage of the Respect for Marriage Act. Recognizing this important moment, these leaders took time away from their own congregations and communities to stand with LGBTQ Americans, as well as families formed across lines of race, and significantly with the non-citizen spouses of some of these Americans. I want to take a minute to talk actually to our producer, Ray Kirstein, who is one of those people. Ray, I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about your relationship and how important this moment could be for you and your partner.
So, Paul, today we could return from Germany, where we've been living in exile for 10 years. Not that we couldn't do that earlier, but the reason we ended up moving to Germany was 10 years ago, before the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, we were in the kind of situation that we could end up in again if the Supreme Court, for example, nullifies national federal marriage equality. And so for us, it was a matter of needing to move to a country where we could live without having to have a work permit for my now husband. And that's how we ended up in Germany.
Because your husband is not a U.S. citizen, that's why this is so important. This is what this is about. It's about security for families. It's about relieving the fear of having to be separated, the fear that at any point the government could intervene in our relationships. And so I just want to recognize you, Ray, for all your work on this show, and also how significant this moment is for all of us who are working for equality for everyone across this country. So thank you for sharing your story and as another example of how important all this work that Interfaith Alliance, along with our partners across the country, are doing. I'm proud of the work Interfaith Alliance was able to do to help give a final push to the Respect for Marriage Act, and it was emotional to watch the Senate pass the act at the end of the week. This moment shows that we, as a nation, may have learned something from the Supreme Court's political nullification of Roe v. Wade. And I'm also proud that on the same week, Interfaith Alliance stood with a coalition of Muslim and other faith groups and partners to say with one voice that persons targeted for violence and even murder simply because they are or appear to be Muslim, they must be honored and remembered looking back and protected and defended going forward. We have great hope for HR 662, and it's another cause to reach out to your congressperson, your representative, and say that this is a priority for you, that we honor these victims. And I know we will be doing more of this kind of work to bring Americans of every faith background and no faith background together to make sure that nobody is left behind and we move forward as a nation. Interfaith Alliance will be there with partners and allies working for the common good, and you can be guaranteed that we will be talking about it on State of Belief. And with that, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week's show. We need your help keeping this show on the air, and I hope you will consider being a partner in this crucial work by making a financial contribution today. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. And you can also be a part of making sure informative and encouraging voices like these are heard by sharing this program with family and friends. Let's get more people listening and more people taking part in these conversations, both on and off the air. Never miss an episode by subscribing to the weekly State of Belief podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. And join the conversation. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at State of Belief and share State of Belief with the people in your life. State of Belief is produced by Ray Kirstein and is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for our special Thanksgiving show, where I will be talking to one of the most spiritual, deep people I know, Rabbi Joshua Stanton. He's an amazing fellow. You're going to want to hear his wisdom, and we can all take a moment and breathe and be thankful for this world and for our life. Until then, I'm Paul Rauschenbusch, and this is State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.